Okay. So, again, welcome everybody to this Saturday's afternoon meditation class. Now, because this is the fifth Saturday of the month, there is no introduction to meditation class, so that everybody comes here together. And it does mean that some of you may feel that the 45-minute meditation, which is going to happen once the intro is finished, the 45-minute meditation is a little bit much for you. So what you can do always, if you're not used to meditating so long, is actually to sit in a quiet place, and after about 20 minutes, you can actually even very quietly get up just to stretch your legs, then come and sit down again, so you can have another peaceful 20 minutes. And see if you can do that without disturbing anybody. If a person is truly aware, mindful and careful, it's very easy to come and go without anyone noticing a thing. There was a Malaysian couple here, nothing to do with Chinese Malaysian Buddhists, but they were at home watching a movie. It must have been a very good movie, because once the movie had finished, they got up, one to go to the toilet, the other one to get a cup of tea. And when they did that, they found to their great surprise that a burglar had been in their house and stolen many things, even from right behind the sofa where they were sitting. That cheeky burglar had been able to come in and steal from right behind them and go out the house again afterwards. And I said, if burglars can come in and go out without disturbing anybody, surely meditators can do better. But unfortunately, embarrassing to say, but they don't. Bang the doors, they shuffle, they move this and move that. So you can if you really want to. So out of kindness to everybody, if you, after 20 minutes, you need to move, to adjust, please do it with mindfulness, really aware, and try not to make any noise to disturb others. And that means anyone from the introduction classes who come in here expecting to have a not such a long meditation, you find it doesn't disturb you as much. And in fact, sometimes just a little bit of motivation, inspiration. It's amazing what you can do. There was in Laos, just when I first became a monk, when Laos had yet to be overrun by the Pathet Lao, there was a monastery in the very deep jungles, and it was very renowned. I knew a few people who went there, a few monks. And the abbot, what he would do, he would take the monks on a walk through the jungles, and a very long path, a deep path through the jungles. And when they were all tired out late in the afternoon, they'd come to a place where these massive tall trees, and those tall trees, they had a bamboo ladder going up to one of the tallest, highest branches, on which there was a little platform. And the platform was just about the size of the little seat I'm sitting on now, made out of wood. No railings. So those monks had to climb up the ladder to meditate high up in those trees, meditate there, cross legs, and the meditation teacher took away the ladder and said, I'll be back tomorrow morning. They had to, after tired, exhausted, nothing to eat, to meditate there all night on this small little platform with no railings, no safety harnesses. And many of those monks got some great meditation because they had to. They had to be careful. They couldn't fall asleep. If they fell asleep, that was it. They'd be tiger food. There were tigers in over there. So many people got, because they had to, they got no choice, so they were alert. And it's amazing sometimes, if we really need to, we can. But when we don't have to, oh, well, never mind. Okay, you'll go asleep. Oh, feel this and that. So please, especially today, try and be kind, calm and peaceful for the sake of others here. So, that's for those of you who come every Saturday afternoon, this is an ongoing class where hopefully, little by little, you can develop the meditation deeper and deeper and deeper. For those who are coming here for the first time after completing the 4 intro classes, that you will find that this is not so specific as you heard before, but more focusing on a little part of this and a little part of that. What I want to discuss or focus on today is something called patience. There was the old simile, which I've done many, many times, about how to get a glass of water to be perfectly still. You can't get a glass of water to be perfectly still by just holding it. I can't get this still in this manner. I've got to focus on it. Is that working? No, not focus. Mindful of it, putting some effort in. And that doesn't work. You have to let it go down, let it go. Put it down, stop interfering. But that's not enough. Is it quiet yet or not yet? Is it moving yet? No, it's still moving. You got to be patient enough to let the process work. And that's something which people tend not to do. After a while, they think, oh, it's not working. Oh, I better do something. Oh, I'm just, this is not such a good meditation. And they interfere with the process to the point where that they don't give it a chance. So, here in this meditation, we've got to just let go, put some space between you and what you're watching, being calm, and just observe without interfering, putting it down. If you can, get the idea. It's almost like a visualization. It's just a way of imagining, a way of setting up your perceptual framework so that when you are looking at whatever you're looking at with your mind, you see it and you just don't interfere with it. You're aware of it and you are kind to it. Which brings me on to one of those wonderful wonderful metaphors for meditation, which turns out to be a wonderful meditation technique, the Emperor's Three Questions meditation technique. When is the most important time? Who's the most important person? What's the most important thing to do? But instead of people, when is the most important time in meditation? Of course, it's always now. There's only a now. Get yourself into this present moment. If as long as you care, look after this present moment, then the next moment will be fine. So we always make sure that we understand that your future in meditation is being made right now. So that's all you need to do. Just be in this moment. What is the most important thing to do? Or rather, what is the most important meditation object? It is whatever you're experiencing right now. Whatever it is, you don't need to choose one meditation object over another. This is the meditation object I like. This is the meditation object I don't like. I don't want to feel itchy in my throat because I've got a cold. I don't want to feel tired. I don't want to feel too hot, too cold. I don't want to feel an ache in my gut. I don't want to feel. That is not how to meditate. Instead, let your body choose and your mind choose what it puts in front of you to watch. You don't hold the remote TV control. Let your mind do that. Whatever it puts up, give it importance. It's valuable. Even if it's unpleasant, it's teaching you something. Even if it's not something you expect, it's important. If you give importance to whatever's coming up in any moment, it's amazing what you find is that you always learn something. It may be just not what you expect, but it means you can always meditate. Even when people complain about their mind wandering here and wandering there, does it really wander anywhere? Or is that just another way of looking at things. I mention that because when I go traveling, teaching overseas, people actually say, well, just you travel too much, Ajahn Brahm. So I don't travel at all. I just sit down in the plane and the aircraft, and the aircraft does the moving. I just sit there, still. Can you understand what this idea of traveling is? Does the mind wander off? What happens? Imagine if your mind wandered and you went with it. You held it, not with force, but just gently held its hand and followed it whichever way it wanted to go. Then, was the mind wandering off? No, you're going with it, totally. So you do need to bring it back. Bring it back where? Where it's wandered off to, you're right alongside it. So it's a different way of looking. So whatever is in front of your mind right now is the most important thing in the whole world, whatever it is. Which means you don't think, oh, crikey, I should be doing something else. Oh, my goodness, I should be washing my breath. Oh, this can't be right. Stop all of that, all that judging. If it's in front of you right now, if this is what you're aware of, it is important. And of course, what to do with it is to care for it. As you all know, if you care for something, it will always run towards you. There's a little dog who just lives down Nansen Way, and when we go on alms round, we always give it a sausage, and that dog always runs towards us. He's very excited. So, imagine that little dog is your mind. It would always run towards you if you're kind to it. So, your mind, are you kind to your mind? Whatever's in front of it right now, are you kind to it? If you do know how kindness is, you find that kindness will mean you're always with whatever's in front of your mind right now. And you find by being kind to whatever you're aware of right now, it does change the experience immensely. What you put between you and that object, if you're kind to it, you care for it, it softens and becomes nice and peaceful and becomes your friend, never your enemy. Who was it? Somebody was telling me that there was some village somewhere, I think it was north of Australia or in the Pacific Islands or Southeast Asia, where the people look at the alligators or the crocodiles as almost like holy. And those crocodiles actually, they never attack anybody. Then you go swimming in there and just the crocodiles, you know, they're friends. Simply because of the kindness and respect. Certainly I know that didn't have crocodiles in monasteries in northeast Thailand, but certainly we did have many snakes, and many of those snakes were venomous. I was always told that 99 of those, they said, just as a rule of thumb, 100 of those snakes were, no, the 100 species of snake, 99 were venomous. If they bit you, you're in big trouble. And the last one of those species of snake, if they caught you, they'd strangle you to death. In other words, all those snakes were very deadly. But you know, so many snakes which I encountered, sometimes they'd crawl on you, sometimes you'd step on them very quickly but jump off without hurting them, never ever bit you or harmed you, because you're always kind to them. Never underestimate the idea of kindness, which actually stops any harm happening. Or just like a few years ago, there was a neighbor's cat would always come on 3 o'clock in the afternoon and would play around, or just beforehand, 2:30, would play around in the reception area. And we knew it was just from around the back here. So I got a call about 2:45. Is my cat over there again? I said, yeah, it's over here. I've got to come to collect it because I'm moving today. So she came around and she appeared in front of those sliding glass doors in the reception area. And I was sitting on the bench. The cat took one look at its owner, took one look at me, and jumped on my lap. Sanctuary. He didn't want to go. But anyway, had to go, poor cat. But anyway, that's what happens. If you're kind, things stay with you. And it's fun to stay with them if you're kind. So this is how we look at whatever comes up in our mind. If you've got a cough, be kind to it. It's here. People say, how can you meditate when you're sick? What are you talking about? Of course you can. It's easy. It is, you don't try and be aware of nimittas and jhanas. Be aware of your itchy throat. Be kind to it. Be aware of your sneeze. That was a good one. Whatever it is, right in front of you right now, be with it. And just allow it to settle down with being here, giving this moment importance and caring for it. And then you find it's easier to meditate anywhere, any place. Okay, so there we go. So now we can actually do the meditation. So usually on a Saturday afternoon, if I'm sitting on this seat, I usually have 15 minutes of guiding meditation, maybe 20, and then I'm quiet until the end of the meditation. Just to get you going, put you in the correct direction, and off you go. That's a good idea. He's a very good disciple, always follows his teacher. So, closing eyes, feeling your body. And you can start by your legs. Asking your legs, how are you? I prefer asking questions of my own body. Similar to a doctor says, now how is the wound feeling today? And actually, when asking that question, it directs your attention. So it directs your search to that part of your body, so you gain the information. It's paying attention as a result of a question. So I ask my legs, how are you? Especially sometimes my feet, they get squashed under the calves. I just check they're okay. And if you need to move, please move. Adjust. Best to adjust now than later. my legs are comfortable. Move up to my butt. Making sure that that is relaxed, comfortable. Fidget now rather than later. And also, there is no magic posture which suits everybody at every time. We always feel, experience in this moment, what comfort is for us now. Generalizations just do not work. That's my butt, it's comfortable. Move up to my back. Stretch it. You don't have to follow me, but a good stretch at this time just brings awareness to my back. At the same time, a very pleasant feeling. A good stretch, releasing those endorphins. Then I relax it. Because I'm aware of the feelings in my back, that's all, just the back, nowhere else. I can soon get to know and understand how my back works. And if there is a tension there, I try and find out how to loosen that tension. Maybe lean back on the chair, or maybe lean forward. Stretch the back. Slump at the back until you find the optimum position. To your hands. Where are they positioned? And again, there's no advantage on one position over another. Just find what's comfortable, what you can sustain for the next 40 minutes. From your hands, move up the arms to your shoulders. Always single out shoulders because they do hold much tension. Imagine them like being stretched, those muscles being pulled apart. It's called stress. Imagine letting go of both ends of those muscles. If you can visualize that, not perfectly, but good enough, you may find the real muscles also relax. up to the throat, relaxing it. So I spend a time on my throat because it's really itchy. Just being with it, caring for it, relaxes it. And if you're already up to your head, relaxing the muscles around the eyes and the mouth. Places where tightness, stress can be exhibited. So I feel those muscles and just relax them. And today just relaxing my sinuses. Until my whole body is so much more relaxed than when I started. And I pause to perceive the pleasure of being relaxed. Feels good, free. It won't be perfect relaxation, but just what you experience now is quite delightful if you pay attention to it. When you want to turn to your peaceometer, how peaceful are you? How agitated? And see what causes peace in your mind. I think it's time I was quiet. Speak again. is getting close to the end of the meditation now. How do you feel? How peaceful are you? How content? I will now ring the gong 3 times to end the meditation. Very good. So if you'd like to relax now, and at the end of this meditation class on a Saturday afternoon, which is streamed live to many countries, and today we have 2 questions, one from Uruguay, the other one from Germany. The first is about the deeper stages of meditation. How to overcome the fear of losing the me, the will, in deep meditation. So what happens in deep meditation? That you're getting very calm and the body relaxes and at peace. You have a lot of delight. The delight is an important part to develop if you wish to get the deep meditation. You just end up watching your breathing. It's so beautiful watching this breath go in, go out, until it, just like sometimes, it's not a best simile, but if you're watching the TV and it's a beautiful piece of music or a beautiful sunset, sometimes you just lose just, you know, the feeling of the body because something delightful takes over. And that's all you're really focusing on. You get drawn in to the beauty. And this is what happens when the breath gets very delightful. The body's relaxed, watching the breath go in because you don't need to move so much. The breath gets very peaceful, smooth, and it starts to disappear, which is where you start to see these beautiful lights in the mind. We call them nimittas. Now, first of all, that in order for these to really develop, you know, you have to let go, which means not being in control. Otherwise, if you try to grab onto them, do something, just like the water simile, I have to really put it down, my body and my mind. Let it go. That is very dangerous for many people because they believe, especially when the 5 senses disappear, if you're not you're not in a place of safety, people could come up right behind you and steal something, or they could injure you because your defenses, I would never do that, of course, the defenses are not active. You're not hearing, you're not seeing, and because of that, that people need to have a lot of trust that you're going to be fine. It's one of the reasons why if we do any deep meditation, it has to be a place usually where people keep precepts. Not harming, not injuring, not killing, just this beautiful relaxation and kindness to one another. Otherwise it becomes a bit dangerous. Actually, you are perfectly safe, but people feel it's dangerous. So in other words, you have to let go of control. And with the letting go of control also comes the idea of who you think you are. You're the one in charge, the one who drives the car, the one who clicks the mouse, the one who chooses. So actually when you start to let go of the will, the choice, you just let things be, you start to understand that with that goes your sense of identity when you're not doing anything? Who are you? One of the old, this was, I saw this with my own eyes, in the walls of the philosophy department over in Cambridge University when I was there. First line, I sometimes get these wrong, but it was something like, to do is to be, which was René Descartes, the French philosopher, materialist. And then we had existentialist, Jean-Paul Sartre. Now, not to do is to be is to do. And then the third line was a famous American contemporary philosopher, Frank Sinatra, do-be-do-be-do. So that was at Cambridge University in England. But yet it was a bit of a joke, but it did actually just show and demonstrate just the connection between being and doing. And if you stop doing things, your being disappears. And to actually to be still, not to do things, you have to just put yourself aside for a while. Stop driving the car. And then it stops. So how do you overcome the fear of losing that? It's just too much fun. After you get into these deep meditations, you get to the point of just so joyful, so much pleasure, so much bliss and ecstasy, that what the heck, I'm going for it. Even though it's a bit scary, it's just the pleasure, the joy takes you over that. And it's, after a while, you find it's not scary at all. As I often say in retreats, the only thing you're in danger of losing if you get into the deep meditations is your hair. Sometimes that life one lives doesn't make any sense anymore. One wants to live a more simple life. Anyway, from Germany, how can I avoid drifting into contemplation when practicing silent present awareness? All I have to do is all I have to do being patient and wait and let nature take its course. That's a very good answer. Yeah, be more patient. Yeah, you have contemplation, but after a while, you reflect afterwards, all that contemplation, where does it ever get you? Does that solve the answers to the mysteries of the universe? Can you just think your way to the end of this life? You find after a while all that thinking, it's just something fundamentally wrong with that. And what's really fundamentally wrong with that is the thinking is just a bunch of labels, signposts. We think in words, in labels, in concepts, and the truth is just where that concept is pointing to. It's not the concept. So the old idea is when you start to think of, right, truth, what is that? It's not a word. You can philosophize about it and write a 30-page thesis and get a PhD, but that's not truth. No more than the description. Oh, one of the Lunig, one of his cartoons. You know Lunig over in Melbourne, one of the great Australian cartoonists. One of my favorite cartoons of his was of this family, and they were in an apartment, watching the TV. And on the TV, there was this beautiful sunset on the TV, and just, that was to the left of the frame of the cartoon. To the right of the frame of the cartoon, there was an open window with the sunset actually happening. So he's very perceptive and makes a point very simply. So, thinking is just like watching the TV. It's one step away from reality. It's a commentary. We're not really looking at what the commentary is pointing to, which is why after a while all the contemplation just, it doesn't really get you anywhere, it's just an escape. And after a while, being patient, contemplation just stops and seeing happens. Experience beyond the words. Okay, any questions from the floor here? Or I should be more precise, from the cushions or from the chairs. Going. Okay, hopefully the, not finished yet, it's about being patient. So it's nice being able just to be here and not controlling the meditation, which means you disappear and you get more peaceful in the deep meditations. And don't be afraid, it's perfectly safe. Although sometimes, wow, you're going like a, same as a prisoner being released from jail. It's pretty scary if you've been in jail for 40 years. But imagine what it must be like. 40 years in jail and the doors of jail are open, you can go out now. Maybe not. I'm happier here in jail. But then little by little, you're afraid, but you feel it's much more wonderful outside. Even your identity changes. You haven't got a number anymore. You haven't got a cell. But you're free. And anyway, it's nice not being anybody. The old saying, nobody's perfect. Are you somebody? If you're a nobody, then you are perfect. Okay, let's pay respect to Buddha Dhamma Sangha, then we can go.